This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.blogsome.com. Childhood by Leo Tolstoy. Chapter 26. What awaited us at the country house? On the 18th of April, we descended from the carriage at the front door of the house at Petrovska. All the way from Moscow, Papa had been preoccupied, and when Volova had asked him whether Mama was ill, he had looked at him sadly and nodded in affirmative. Nevertheless, he had grown more composed during the journey, and it was only when we were actually approaching the house that his face again began to grow anxious, until, as he leaped from the carriage and asked Folka, who had run breathlessly to meet us, "How is Natalia Nikolaevna now?" His voice was trembling, and his eyes were filled with tears. The good old Folka looked at us, and then lowered his gaze again. "Finally," he said, as he opened the hall door and turned his head aside, "it is the sixth day since she has not left her bed. Milka, who, as we afterwards learned, had never ceased to whine from the day when Mama was taken ill, came leaping joyfully to meet Papa and barked him a welcome as she licked his hands. But Papa took her aside and went first to the drawing room and then into the divannaia, from which the door led into the bedroom. The nearer he approached the latter, the more did his movements express the agitation that he felt. Entering the divannaia, he crossed it on tiptoe, seeming to hold his breath. Even then, he had to stop and make the sign of the cross before he could summon up courage to turn the handle. At the same moment, Mimi, with disheveled hair and eyes red with weeping, came hastily out of the corridor. "Ah, Peter Alexandrovich," she said in a whisper and with a marked expression of despair. Then, learning that Papa was trying to open the door, she whispered again, "Not here. This door is locked. Go round the door on the other side." Oh, how terribly all this wrought upon my imagination, racked as it was by grief and terrible forebodings. So we went round to the other side. In the corridor, we met the gardener, Akim, who had been wont to amuse us with his grimaces. But at this moment, I could see nothing comical in him. Indeed, the sight of his thoughtless, indifferent face struck me more painfully than anything else. In the maidservants' hall, through which we had to pass, two maids were sitting at their work, but rose to salute us with an expression so mournful that I felt completely overwhelmed. tie to Vishnu. Spectacles on nose and engaged in darning stockings. She did not approach us to kiss me as she had been used to do, but just rose and looked at us, her tears beginning to flow afresh. Somehow it frightened me to see everyone on Her Holiness begin to cry, although they had been calm enough before. On the left stood the bed behind the screen, while in the great armchair the doctor lay asleep. Beside the bed, a young, fair-haired, and remarkably beautiful girl in a white morning wrapper was applying ice to Mama's head, but Mama herself I could not see. This girl was La Belle Tremaine, of whom Mama had written, and who afterwards played so important a part in our family life. As we entered, she disengaged one of her hands, straightened the pleats of her dress on her bosom, and whispered, "She is insensible." Though I was in an agony of grief, I observed at that moment every little detail. It was almost dark in the room and very hot, while the air was heavy with the mingled scent of mint, eau de cologne, chamomile, and Hoffman's pastilles. The latter ingredient caught my attention so strongly that even now I can never hear of it or even think of it without my memory carrying me back to that dark, close room and all the details of that dreadful time. Mama's eyes were wide open, but they could not see us. Never shall I forget the terrible expression in them, the expression of agonies of suffering. Then we were taken away. When later I was able to ask Natalia Savishna about Mama's last moments, she told me the following. After you were taken out of the room, my beloved one struggled for a long time as though someone were trying to strangle her. Then at last she laid her head back upon the pillow and slept softly, peacefully, like an angel from heaven. I went away for a moment to seek out her medicine, and just as I entered the room again, my darling was throwing the bedclothes from off her and calling for your papa. He stooped over her, but straight failed her to say what she wanted to. All she could do was open her lips and gasp, "My children, my God, the children, the children." I would have run to fetch you, but Ivan Vasilich stopped me, saying that it would only excite her. It were best not to do so. Then suddenly she stretched her arms out and dropped them again. What she meant by that gesture, the good God alone knows, but I think that in it she was blessing you, you the children whom she could not see. God did not grant her to see her little ones before her death. remember. My God, never forsake them. Then the pain mounted to her heart, and from her eyes it was plain that she suffered terribly, my poor one. She sank back upon the pillows, tore the bedclothes with her teeth, and wept. Yes, and what then? I asked, but Natalia Savishna could say no more. She turned away and cried bitterly. Mama had expired in terrible agonies. And